which is that we are going to be awarding $1 million to randomly to people who have signed the petition every day from now until the election. So, you know, one of the challenges we're having is like, well, how do we get people to know about this petition? Because the legacy media won't report on it. You know, not everyone's on X. So I figure, how do we get people to know about it? Well, this news, I think, is going to really fly. So,
the 2024 Pennsylvania general election is shaping up to be a showdown of immense proportions. As you know, the calculus here is simple. Win Pennsylvania, win the White House. It is literally that simple. In between now and Election Day, I'm going to be bringing you the breaking news from the ground of this key battleground state. And as you know, early voting is well underway in Pennsylvania. Activists like Scott Pressler have helped shift the entire state to the right through his ongoing voter registration efforts. Republicans have now outregistered 66 of Pennsylvania's 67 counties. At least 5 counties have flipped from blue to red as a result. And while Democrats are pouring money into campaigns, enlisting celebrity endorsements, all as legacy media outlets are bolstering their narrative, Pennsylvania is getting a secret weapon that appears to be outdoing the entire Democratic machine. Two words, Elon Musk. Joining me today to help us think through the significance of Elon and Pennsylvania and the election as a whole is Angie Wong. Angie had a successful career as a news editor, reporter, and columnist. Since she pivoted over to politics, she's worked on numerous political races at the local and federal level. And Angie, she and I have been on some talk show panels together as well. So Angie, great to see you again.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Steve, for having me. This is the first time I'm on your show, so I'm super excited. And I loved your analysis of Pennsylvania, Florida, where I am. I've been watching the polls here very, very closely. Everything you say is completely spot on. I love the firewall analogy. I think that's great. I'm using that in my next clip somewhere. I'm just letting you know in advance.
We're crushing the the firewall. It is funny because Democrats don't seem to recognize. They're like, oh, the electorate's not going to be as big as it was in 2020. So we don't need, this is how they're coping with their shrinking margins. We don't need as big of a firewall. Dude, Republican registrations are through the roof. You're going to need a bigger one. There's more Republicans and Florida is a perfect symbol of at a real intense level of what's happening, it seems, as to the electorate as a whole.
I wish that were true. I do. I hope every single state is getting bright red like we are here in Florida. We were just talking off air that, you know, Florida used to be a swing state. Remember 2000? That was the biggest swing state in the world. So now it's, you know, we're not all the way. We're out of the purple territory. We're not even light pink. We're kind of hot pink at the moment. Really happy about that. What you're seeing, I think, across the nation, especially here in Florida, is rage voting. We are rage voting. Yeah. Republicans, we've been waiting 4 years this very day. It's here. So the lines are long. People are like having a party waiting to, you know, get their vote, waiting to get their I voted stickers. You know, we couldn't wait. I pray that this kind of momentum sticks for the next 2 weeks. Yeah. Then we're good. But I have a feeling these are very, very early days. And I'm afraid that the momentum might die midweek because usually early voting is probably it's like, you know, watching paint dry. I mean, I don't know how many times you've done poll watching. I have. It's like how many coffee breaks can you take during early election? Right. So I do hope that this sustains itself. It's not just early momentum and it dies off after a while, because if that's the case, what did we just do? Right. We just gave Democrats early numbers.
Right. Right. Yeah, that's so. Right. And cannibalize our own vote and the like. No. Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to ask you about Elon Musk, especially in relation to your public relations background and the like. From your perspective, so he's right here in our backyard. I was about to interview Cliff Maloney, who's doing the Pennsylvania chase. We're doing ballot chasing, and he called us up like 5 minutes before the interview. He's like, guys, I'm sorry, I can't make the interview. I'm getting to hang out with Elon Musk. And we're like, what? That's insane.
Love.
What kind of effect do you think this massive figure like Elon Musk has on the swing state of Pennsylvania?
You know, that's going to be proven. I mean, I wish I could, you know, do a little PR spin on this and say, yeah, he's going to be amazing for PA. I'm not entirely sure, but I'll tell you right now, he does have the mechanisms. I do see that everything that Elon Musk does and his PAC, America PAC, is on the top of my feed. He's able to put that up there, right? So finally, we have that kind of echo chamber for the Republicans. Now, I think he's doing a fantastic job, and that's why the Democrats brought out Mark Cuban. You need a billionaire versus a billionaire. And it's like, you know, which billionaire do you trust more? Elon Musk, clearly, this is authentic to him. This is not just him being a surrogate or a mouthpiece for Donald Trump. He really feels it. He really wants it. And he knows that Donald Trump is the future. Because Donald Trump can think like that. Kamala Harris, I don't even know what she stands for still. And I, you know, I have to take my eyelids open to actually watch her. I still don't really know what she stands for other than, you know, recycling Joe Biden's talking points. So, you know, at the moment, I think Elon Musk, he's going to take the credit for it. I think it's a group effort. I think Elon Musk was the cherry on top.
Yeah, I love how you put that. That's a great segue. But before that, I don't know if you saw the video of Kamala doing one of her word salads with Liz Cheney. And Liz Cheney, you could just see she's just nodding off, and it looks like she's almost falling asleep. It's just like, with Kamala, I've never heard someone say what speaks so much yet say so little. I think that's the aphorism we'd use there. But what's so interesting, which you just said, is the Trump campaign seems to represent a team that's much larger than Trump than himself. And I've heard one writer refer to our time today as brokenism. So in other words, our whole nation recognizes that our public institutions are broken. But we're reorganizing around two major factions in response to that. Brokenness, believe things are broken beyond repair, and we need innovators from the outside to come in and fix it. And then on the other side, there's status quoists who continue to hope beyond hope that the establishment still has the resources to fix the problems that they create. And it seems clearly Elon and Vivek and RFK and Tulsi and so forth, they're all representatives of the brokenest coalition. And so they tend to be younger, and they're just breathing. They want to bring new life into Washington, D.C. and revivify it from the outside. What do you think?
Oh, I love it. You package that so well. Absolutely. We do need young blood in Washington if we're going to fix things. Because right now you have, I'm sorry to say, people that are way past their retirement age writing laws for my future and my kids' future. Yeah. You know, we passed a Section 230. I have to tell you, there's a lot of Congress members who didn't even understand the words on that bill because it is just so foreign to them. You still have congressional members that still print out their emails to read them and then have their staff respond to them. So, you know, you're writing those type of laws for my future. I don't need that. We are building cities now, new cities. We are planning for the future. We're here in Florida with Space Coast stretching all the way down to where I am in Miami. And I'm really proud to represent my district of Miami because we're going to make sure we're the next city. Right. Because we understand the stuff. Now we need the laws to actually pair up with some of the visions that we have. If we're going to be competitive in this world, if we're going to be competitive with Russia and China and slowly approaching Iran, we better have our own talent nurtured and financed. Right. Yeah. So we need all that infrastructure built in. We need new leadership. Yep. I'm glad Vivek is there. Tulsi Gabbard, I know very little bit about her other than she's pretty and she speaks well and she's a vet. And of course, Elon Musk, who's such a visionary. I mean, remember, he's giving these speeches in your hometown or near you, and then he's launching rocket ships at night.
And then having the rocket ships automatically come back to where they lifted off. Yeah, it's just absolutely incredible. I heard somebody, I was reading an article, they argued that J.D. Vance is an embodiment of sort of this new population coalition that's forming, an embodiment of the blue collar working class Appalachian with this new tech right that's rising, because, you know, he made his money with Peter Thiel and so forth. So he's able to actually embody this new brokenness coalition, as it were, in a way that I think even Trump can't, because Trump, of course, from New York, he has nothing to do with Appalachia, whereas JD does. JD had that amazing upbringing, and so he's able to blend together this, I guess, I forget who put it, this aristo populism, where you have a new elite, a new aristocracy rising. Every society has to have their elite, but they use their power and their influence to turn into reality the values, interests, and concerns of the people, as opposed to the elite that we have now that seems to so despise and disdain the values, interests, and concerns of the people.
You know, J.D. Vance is a very interesting pick. And when he was chosen, I was scratching my head a little bit. Look, he is every man, every American embodied all in one, with a pretty little, Yale degree that kind of polishes him up too.
Yeah,
I think he is. And same thing with Trump. These are the old JFK Democrats.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
wow. This is like Camelot. This is all those, like, it's all the hopeful stuff, the futuristic stuff, all those things that you embodied when you think of what great men look and feel and vibe. Let's use Kamala's vibe. Like, okay, this is what I think about. And it makes me really, really excited, because here is a reality that we don't talk a lot about, but it's just a few weeks away. Trump may get sentenced by a New York Manhattan court, right? Mm-hmm. And we don't know it right now if the Supreme Court's going to step in. We pray and we hope that there is an appeal that goes in Trump's favor. But it's fair, you know. Trump might really need JD as a real surrogate in a very, very, Oval Office type way. All those questions that we still have, we're just trying to get Trump over the finish line. It looks right now to be really good. Still, man, Dr. Steve, 2 weeks is a long time in politics.
I know. You know that more than any. Well, give us, we were talking before the interview about that very interesting sort of how Florida is a bit of a bellwether. It has been historically with, ironically, Pennsylvania. So Florida, wherever historically since 1948, wherever Florida tends to go politically, Pennsylvania seems to follow. It may take a little time, but it seems to follow. You're in Miami. I'm so excited. I did a video, I don't know, like 3 weeks ago about, I forget the title of it. It was something like how cities are turning right. There's been a number of studies and articles talking about how more and more cities in the United States are actually ironically going more and more Republican. But the number one city that they all flagged was yours, Miami. There's something's happening in the county as a whole, Miami-Dade. You guys are amazing. So tell us what's happening on the ground in Florida as a whole, perhaps Miami is specifically, to give us Pennsylvanians, I'm in the shadow, I'm in Delaware, but in the Delaware Valley here, give us some hope here of what would hopefully, if this same pattern holds, this bellwether pattern holds, maybe our future as well.
Yeah, I mean, look, cities over the last 4 years has been mainly affected by the uprising crime. And also, you know, our police forces have been generally staying away from a lot of the crime because they've been battered by the rhetoric of the left. Cities are also being drained of resources at the moment because of, well, you have a lot of people coming in to our towns and taking up a lot of resources allocated to citizens like myself and my family. Instead, they're going to paying for free turkeys for illegal migrants. So, you know, all those things are adding up, and now we're seeing the effects of it. That's why you're not just seeing Miami turning red, but you're also seeing parts of New York City turning red. Now, is it going to turn red this cycle? I don't think so. It's New York City, I think, is still D plus 14 the last time I checked. But ultimately, we are seeing the very, you know, we're at the front lines of what the last 4 years has done. We're the first ones to see it, you know, and our insurance prices have jumped up so high because of all these extra costs. So I think, you know, to give hope to other cities in around the country, you know, what I can say is this. I think people are waking up, and they're waking up to politics. A lot of the times you go and live in cities to build your life, to live a lifestyle. You're rarely even thinking about politics for the most part. You just want to go to the bar and you want to go hang out and you want to, you know, do the city life thing. Now you have to really get involved because now your public schools are compromised, right? Your police force is compromised and your insurance just went sky high to the point where you have to leave. And, you know, I hope that what I'm seeing as well is more and more new cities crop up. So with Miami, we have a huge Latino population, mm-hmm. and that seems to be where everybody is focused on right now. Nancy Pelosi is in my district this morning, okay, trying to get out the Latino vote. Trump just gave a Hispanic roundtable at his golf course mm-hmm. in Doral, Miami. And then Roger Stone's going to be here later on this evening. Wow. I don't know what he's doing, but I guess he's getting out the vote. I'd like to think that's what he's doing, but that's what it is. You're bleeding Latinos. You have the Black community fleeing the Democrats because why? It's popular now to be Republican. Yeah. In 2020, you didn't have that. And in 2016, you would have been hit, you know, over the head with a baseball bat if you were wearing a red hat, right? So now we've removed the stigma of being, you know, a Republican.
Yeah.
That's what Trump did. He made it fashionable. Right. And that you can't really take away for a little bit. It's still fun. It's young.
I love what you say, because with him at McDonald's on Sunday, he's the one having fun. It's Kamala that's having these meltdowns. She's getting so angry and so forth. And I forget which legacy media outlet reported on it, but it was an op-ed, and the fellow's argument was basically, sorry, Democrats, most Americans just don't buy that Trump's a fascist. You've made your argument. You've made your plea. Joe Scarborough's gone on his screeds. You've done it all. But most just don't buy it. They actually find him a pretty fun guy, and they think he's an innovator, and they certainly seem to trust him more with their future than with just the brokenism of Kamala.
Yeah, remember, Trump is from New York, and not only from New York, but Queens, where like something like 600 languages are spoken. I'm from Queens, New York. It's really difficult to be a racist if you're kind of brought up in that kind of environment. I'm just going to say that. Trump's humor, I get it. It's a particular flavor, right? And it's kind of like a little retro at the same time. It's kind of like an 80s, you know, star in that way. It's hard to get it, and I know it offends people. It took me a while. But once you get that it's like grandpa, right? Yeah. A little bit telling jokes. Then once you do that and you're like, but he actually has a really good heart and he really wants to fix his country and he knows he can't do it alone. So he's bring on the superpowers, the superheroes to help him. And that's what all these guys are. And, you know, I'm excited. I think that, you know, come January 20th, we're going to see some real changes in our country. I've heard excuses about this where he's going to be a lame duck president. No way. This guy, he's got a bone to pick. Yeah. He's got, you know, he's got something to prove here and he's going to get it done. So, awesome. Two more weeks, man, it's been a long election.
The solace I take is historically, he's just such a good closer. Yeah, that's the solace I take. We'll see. You never know what the October surprises are going to be and all that.
Do you think there's going to be one? Do you still think there's time for one?
I'm still thinking. I think Kamala is the first self-inflicted October surprise. I really do. I will see. I'm laughing past the graveyard on that one, but we'll see. I do not know right now. I mean, it seems a little late, but we'll see.
Well, we'll see, especially what's going on with the Israel, the leaks mm-hmm. of the documents. I mean, there's clearly something I was expecting. Actually, I mean, I'm not advising Kamala, but if she needed a little help, you know, I'm sure she's trying to hurry up a Middle East peace plan that would bring back a lot of the Jewish base that she's lost. But I don't know. Early voting has started in almost every single state. Yeah, it may be too late now. It may just be too late.
That's the way I feel. I feel it's like it's baked into the cake. And with the voter registration advantages, they keep saying, oh, but we'll show up. The Democrats will show up on election day. But look at the voter registration event. There's not enough. They're already there. It's a Pennsylvania's registration deadline passed last night at midnight. I mean, it's over. It's done. It's the books are closed. So I don't. We'll see. But I'm very. Yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic, just in the sense that the electorate is a unique 2024 electorate that looks very Trumpy, very Republican, and again, it's being led by you guys in Florida. I don't know what you did right. I'm from Connecticut, you know, so I was just above you, but I only made it as far down as Delaware, 20 minutes from Biden's basement. So I don't know what you did right to get all the way down to Miami.
You got to come down. You got to come down and join us. Look, this is a big party here. We're all super excited. You know, I'm holding back my excitement because, you know, as we said, these early momentums, these early numbers, it's rage voting.
Right.
And I see it because I went to, you know, I went to the polls and I watched people like just go crazy voting. I loved it. But for 2 weeks straight, I don't know. We're giving data to the other side and, you know, they're going to motivate their votes. Look, they're launching in Atlanta today, a bus tour just to get out black male voters.
Right.
You know, so, you know, they're in full panic. You know, they're throwing money where they never had to throw money before. And I'm talking the DNC. They went like in 2022, when they lost five seats to Republicans, it's because they never thought they had to spend money in New York City. Right. So now, they've decided, oh, we got to throw millions, hundreds of millions into getting these seats back. And I think we were talking off air that Florida seats might actually save New York in Congress. Any seats that we lose in New York, and it looks like there's three that are really, really vulnerable, we might gain back in Florida.
Gain back in Florida. Oh, that would be so that talk about revenge there. Oh, that would be so awesome. It is part of the red economy that's rising. It's just left UGs are coming into Florida by the plane load, and they want to make Florida even more and more red. We're seeing it in Texas. We're seeing it in Tennessee. People are so worried that as the left UGs came in, they would bring their blue state politics. We're finding out no, they don't want those blue. That they would have stayed in the blue state politics. As a matter of fact, we're even getting some data that shows that the remnants of very, very left-wing woke mentalities are leaving states like Florida. They're leaving Tennessee. They're leaving Oklahoma. They can't stand it anymore. They don't see any future for themselves ideologically. And so it's, but I think for every one they gain, we gain two or something like that. It's absolutely incredible. Angie, where can people find you online?
Yeah, if you guys want to follow me, I'm available on X. Elon Musk's, you know, backyard, and you can follow me at Angie Wong, and just that. Yeah, no, I look forward to hearing from everyone. I love to hear your comments. You know, Dr. Steve, you're a recent discovery to me. I don't know why we didn't meet before, but I loved your analysis. I really do, and I hope to follow you. And I still want a copy of your signed book there.
Oh, that's right. We'll have to talk about that. Don't leave. You have to give me a PO box or so to send it to. I will send it to you. But absolutely. Gang, make sure you follow Andrew Wong over at X. And don't forget to keep a close eye on Pennsylvania this November. Every day, we're going to try to give you some kind of update on the Keystone State. And hopefully we're going to do this. We're going to take it all the way. God bless, gang.